Hi, this is Paul Stanley.
Hi, this is Gene Simmons of Kiss for Rad.
Recording artists against drunk driving.
Getting drunk may be your business, but it's my business too, because when you get out on the road, my butt's in your hands. Get a designated driver. I don't want to die because you want to have fun. Remember, music lives,
and so should you. Don't drink and drive. I want you alive.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
On the other hand, if you really don't like KISS, maybe that's a way to... Nah, never mind. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Time for Off the Wall. And before we start with the actual show, I just feel it's important to issue a retraction for something that I said last week. In fact, something I said the week before that as well. I said it in December. I said it all throughout the autumn and the summer. I said it all last year and probably most of the year before that. I criticized George W. Bush for making mistakes. And it's obvious now. It's obvious now that the person who made the mistake was me. Now, why do I say that? Because look at the news. Look at what's going on around us. The guy cannot lose. All right? The guy simply, he's blessed. You know, we start back in 2000, where out of nowhere, this guy becomes the front runner. I mean, nobody outside Texas knew who he was. They knew the name, maybe, but they didn't know anything about his positions. They didn't even know what his voice sounded like. He's the front runner. He gets through the election somehow, where he loses the popular vote, gets appointed by the Supreme Court. The charade of 9/11, where he had to, you know, sit in the elementary school and finish the book. Most people would get a lot of crap for that, but this nation rallied behind him. It's important to finish books, especially when you don't do it very often. And then, you know, all kinds of other things, invasions of countries where other people might be criticized a little bit. Well, let's see where it's going. Let's see what happens. Let's see if how many people actually die. Let's see if the rest of the world really hates us all that much. And you know what? He got away with it. He got away with it. Then the whole RNC charade, and then a second election where he actually won this time. And now, finally, after all of that, victory in Iraq. Yeah, everybody turned out for the elections. Everybody turned out, and it was a great success. And everything that this invasion and occupation stood for has been validated. Just like a parking ticket when you go to the mall. So I just want to say, you know, all right, I misjudged the whole situation. Apparently, the way I saw it just isn't the way it is. I think maybe what we're dealing with here is something supernatural. Because it just doesn't make any sense. Off the Wall is on. Yeah, well, you know, we're going to figure this out, because it's not as cut and dry as you might think it is. Remember the day that American troops marched into Baghdad and they were greeted with flowers? Turned out to be poisonous flowers, but the point is they were flowers that people were throwing at them. And everybody was saying, aha, this proves it. This proves that all you peacenicks are wrong and that we're doing the right thing by invading another country and forcing their leaders out and shoving democracy down their throats. Well, back then I remember saying, let's sit back and see what happens next. because I'll bet it won't be as simple as it appears right now. And I think that's kind of the way we have to look at the election. Yeah, everything looked great. Everything looked amazing. And I'm happy. I'm thrilled that people actually were able to stand up to all the terror and threats that they were facing. And if nothing else, at least make a symbolic gesture by waiting in line, sticking their fingers in the purple dye, and voting. Of course, you know, the question remains, what were they voting for? Will this actually make any difference at all? And can you say an election is actually valid if it comes about in the way that it came about? I don't know, just some questions to ponder. We'll talk about this a little bit more later on. And, of course, we can take your phone calls in addition, if you feel so inclined. I imagine there are people who want to talk about this, because I sense a bit of confusion among some of the people that oppose the invasion, such as, what do we do now? Seems like everything is going Bush's way. Well, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors. Of course things are going Bush's way. They have to. If you want to have some fun with it, find a copy of Bush's inauguration address. It's online someplace. I'm sure you can find an audio copy of it. Or even a printed transcript. Look how many times he mentions Iraq. I'll tell you right now how many times he mentioned Iraq. Zero. Not once. Kind of like what happened to Osama bin Laden once they realized that was a lost cause. Well, tomorrow, when he gives his State of the Union address, let's see how many times he mentions Iraq then. You see, if something goes his way, he'll mention it a lot. If something doesn't go his way, it doesn't exist. It's Orwellian. Maybe that's another book he read. Gotta give him credit. He's doing his homework. But again, we'll analyze this a little bit later on. This breaking news just in, Pope John Paul has been taken to the hospital only a short time ago. So we could have some interesting developments out of the Vatican. Anyway, it's still snowy out here in the greater metropolitan Starnberg area. Last week, I actually made it to the station without driving, and then made it all the way into the city without driving, which, you know, I like doing that. I like surviving without a car. I think it's important to do that, and that's one thing I like about blizzards and crippling weather conditions, because it forces you to get a little bit closer to nature. You know, when the roads are covered with snow, you can't drive around like you normally do. You have to figure out alternative ways to get around. Now, of course, people around here, and I guess everywhere in America, overreact. You know, snow's coming. At most, you'll be in your house for a day and a half. But if you go down to the store or Price Club or something like that, it's like a war is on the way. People are stocking up for 6 months worth of supplies. And they've got their huge battle tanks out there that can feed an army, literally. It's amazing. When I was in Canada a couple of weeks ago, the price of gas is higher there, as it should be. I think gas should be more expensive, because it costs a lot of money, and we get it artificially cheap here. In Canada, a place where you think they would need SUVs, you know, big vehicles, sturdy frames, and big-ass tires and all that kind of thing. They don't have nearly as many. They have a lot more small cars. Because gas is so expensive. And they get around. They get by just fine. But here, where we hardly ever need to drive off-road, on mountains or whatever, where the weather sometimes is nasty, but not nearly often enough to justify having one of these things 365 days a year. Here, because of the gas prices being what I consider to be artificially low, I know they're high in many people's opinions, you can probably just look out whatever you're in right now. If you're in a house, look out the window. If you're in a car, well, look out the window, please. and you'll see an SUV somewhere in America. Yeah, you might even be in one. And I just think the whole thing is a bit silly. I remember the gas crisis of the 70s. Yeah, I go way back to there. And I remember what happened then. People stopped using big cars. People stopped. They got small cars. They got foreign cars. And our way of thinking kind of changed. But today, after the whole Republican Revolution and more simple-minded thinking, when we're faced with an energy crisis, we spit in its face. And we get the biggest car we can think of with the worst possible gas mileage, and think that somehow we're standing up for ourselves. Anyway, I just enjoy going to the gas station, sometimes just sitting there and watching people crying as they fill up their SUVs, seeing it going into the triple digits. Oh, yes. Anyway, you know, something else that I finally got my car dug out from I think about 3 feet of snow, which was on top of it and behind it. Didn't take all that long, because I believe in the method of simply plowing through something. So basically, you know, you shovel a little bit of snow, and then you just hit reverse as hard as you can and plow through a snowbank, and you're out. That's all there is to it. I don't understand the people who go nuts shoveling for hours, hours at a time. Oh my God, it's heart-wrenching. These people, they have to shovel every single square inch of their driveway, of their sidewalk. Yeah, in the city, I understand it, because you have to. In the city, you have to have the sidewalk cleared or you can get sued. But, you know, your own home. What is the point of shoveling an entire driveway? You know, I see people doing this. I watched one of my neighbors doing this. It took them literally all day, from morning until dusk. It's a fairly big driveway, but it took all day. That's an entire day gone. And what do you get out of it in the end? The ability to move your car a few feet further. Wow. I mean, you know, it's nice, I guess, but what's wrong with walking a little bit? You put your car somewhere else, and you walk through the snowbanks. That's what I've been doing for the last week, and I'll continue to do it as long as the snowbank is there. You know, it's not like shoveling snow is the best exercise in the world. I think walking is better exercise than shoveling snow. Every time there's a blizzard, all these people get heart attacks and keel over in the emergency rooms because they overexerted themselves. You don't see people coming in from walking, though. I had this philosophy ever since I was a child of not shoveling driveways. And, you know, everyone told me I'd mature at some point and I'd come to my senses. Well, that has yet to happen. All right, my driveway is still completely unshoveled. It might be the only one in the neighborhood. I hope it is. I hope it serves as a testament to leaving things be. And yeah, I've got to walk a little bit more. Not a problem. My other neighbor had professionals do the driveway. I asked how much it cost. $200 plus tip. $200 plus tip for a little bit of convenience. You know, in another week or so, I'll probably be able to drive up my driveway anyway. Now I just have to figure out how to spend all that money I saved. And the day I saved, too, not doing it myself. So, folks, if you still haven't shoveled your driveway, don't. It's a waste of time. As long as you can put your car someplace, put it there, let the snow alone, it'll melt on its own, enjoy it. And hopefully we'll get more. Hopefully we'll get more snow, lots more. I'm very content the way things are going so far this year, where we get 2 feet of snow on the ground, and it has no intention of leaving. You know, because temperatures have not gone up. And that's the way winter should be. I'd be happy if it stayed this way until April. Not a problem. You won't see me complaining. Yet, anyway. But I'll tell you what really is a pain is getting around when you don't have a car. If they made things a little bit easier and a little bit cheaper, I think a lot more people would be doing this. Now, last week after the show, I had to get to the city, and usually I hop in a car and simply, you know, drive. And it takes about an hour and 15 minutes, maybe, from Stony Brook. Well, I know that if you take the train, it takes much longer. Of course, it shouldn't take much longer. It should be quicker. That's how it is in most places. But I was resigned to that fact. But the other thing on top of that was that it's a two-hour wait for the next train after this this show gets off the air. So, you know, that's 4 hours. 4 hours wasted to get into the city, where normally it would take me an hour and 15 minutes. And on top of that, they expect me to pay them for this. Just not right. But I was lucky. I was lucky last week because when I walked all the way across the athletic fields to the train station, I found a train there. Yes, Long Island Railroad incompetence had actually benefited me this time. The train that was supposed to have left at, I think, 6:45 was still there at 7:30. There was something wrong with it, and everybody was very angry. But I was able to jump on at the last moment. Of course, that cost me because I had to pay the penalty. There's a penalty if you buy the ticket on board. And they're going nuts with this penalty, too. It used to be, I think, a dollar. Then they increased it. Then they increased it again. I think it's up to $3 now, and they want to raise it to $5. It's quickly approaching what the fare is. So it cost me $11 just to get into the city. And it took more than 2 hours, too, because the train had to stop for a few other things. But, you know, if they made things a little bit more convenient, a little bit cheaper, a little bit more frequent, then maybe more people would give up those SUVs and actually use mass transit. But don't hold your breath. Yeah, spit in the face of energy problems. So that's where things stand weather-wise here. Let's take a look at some news. Oh, programming note. Next week we won't be on the air. As next week is the Reggae Marathon here at WUSB. I strongly urge everybody listening, whether you're listening on the radio, whether you're listening on the internet, to use whatever fastening equipment you have to make sure that your tuner does not drift, make sure that nobody closes your browser if you're listening on the internet, and you have the entire Reggae Marathon broadcasting loudly in your home. Because that's the only way to listen. Turn up the bass. It's important. That'll be on all next week. So we won't be on a week from tonight. And a further programming note, the other radio program, which is on Wednesday nights on BAI, that's not going to be on either tomorrow or next Wednesday because of their fundraiser. So that means I'm on kind of a sabbatical from radio, which is kind of cool. I won't be on the radio again for another 2 weeks. Kind of cool for the listeners, is what I mean. I'll find something to do. I'll keep myself busy. Don't worry about that. I won't be shoveling the driveway, that's for sure. Okay, speaking of trains, did you hear this story? This guy in California, this could only happen in California, parks his SUV in front of, on the train tracks. The train hits it, derails, hits two other trains, 11 people are killed. Now, the irony of this guy wanted to commit suicide. Yeah, this guy was fed up with life, so he decided he was going to commit suicide. I can sort of understand the mistake he made. Because, you know, the way it's portrayed in television and, you know, historically, you put a car in front of a train track, train comes, hits the car dies, and everybody in it dies. Train doesn't get hurt. Well, it doesn't work that way. Apparently, our cars are too heavy and our trains are too light. I think that's true. If you take a train in Europe, and I'm not including England here because their trains are horrible, but in many, I don't mean horrible, I mean there's lots of them, and they got personality, but come on. If you take a train in continental Europe, you'll notice it just feels so much sturdier and heavier than if you take a train here in this country. I don't know why that is. Maybe somebody can enlighten me. Do we have lighter trains? Is the track somehow not built the same way? I don't know. But I think it's wrong for, you know, somebody, for a train hitting a vehicle to be derailed. Now, what happened was, and it was really a horrible scenario, one commuter train apparently was very near another commuter train going in the opposite direction. When the first commuter train derailed, it hit the other train, which also derailed. And then, on top of that, the train hit a parked freight train on a third track. So it was a big mess. Three trains involved. One SUV causing all these problems. Now, the irony of this whole thing, the guy wanted to commit suicide. He changed his mind. He changed his mind and he ran away. They caught him. Apparently, he couldn't move his SUV because they suck and he can't start them in a crisis. But this guy, who wanted to kill himself, changed his mind and wound up killing 11 other people in the process, is now facing the death penalty. And, on top of everything else, he's on suicide watch. Come on already! So nobody knows what to do. My suggestion, cancel the suicide watch, call it even. You know, it's not really a win-win situation, but who knows? Only in California, right? Okay, what else do we got in the news? This is kind of depressing. Do I really want to read this? I have to read this, don't I? Hang on, let me click reload on the webpage here, see how the Pope's doing. He's still hospitalized. Okay, we'll let you know if anything changes as far as that goes. I was in this radio station when the Pope was shot. I remember this. Breaking news on the radio. Some maniac tried to shoot the Pope. That was many years ago. Same Pope, too. Okay, here's a depressing story came out of yesterday's USA Today. One in three U.S. high school students say the press ought to be more restricted. And even more say the government should approve newspaper stories before readers see them. Oh, yeah, I have your attention now. Do you want me to repeat it? Okay, I'll repeat it. But let this be a lesson that, you know, sometimes something important comes along and you're not ready for it. One in three U.S. high school students, 33 1/3%, say the press ought to be more restricted. And more than that, say the government should approve newspaper stories before readers see them. United States! Oh, yeah, maybe they just asked three morons or something like that. No, they asked 112,003 morons. All right, maybe they're not all morons, but at least a third of them are. 36% believe newspapers should get government approval of stories before publishing. 51% say they should be able to publish freely. 13% have no opinion. They always will have no opinion. Yeah, 51%. Okay, the majority still thinks that newspapers should publish freely. But, you know, that's not really something that fills me with relief there. Asked whether the press enjoys too much freedom, not enough, or about the right amount, 32% say too much, 37% say it has the right amount, 10% says it has too little. The Survey of First Amendment Rights was commissioned by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation and conducted last spring by the University of Connecticut. It also questioned 327 principals and 7,889 teachers. The findings aren't surprising to Jack Dvorak, director of the High School Journalism Institute at Indiana University in Bloomington. Even professional journalists are often unaware of a lot of the freedoms that might be associated with the First Amendment. The survey confirms what a lot of people who are interested in this area have known for a long time. He says kids aren't learning enough about the First Amendment in history, or in civics, or in English. It's part of our Constitution, so this should be part of a formal education, says Dvorak, who has worked with student journalists since 1968. Although a large majority of students surveyed say musicians and others should be allowed to express unpopular opinions, 74%, three-quarters, say people shouldn't be able to burn or deface an American flag as a political statement, and 75% mistakenly believe it is illegal. Can you believe that? I love getting into arguments about this, too. These people are over there fighting and dying, so you have the right to express yourselves. So don't you dare express yourselves, or I'm going to kick your ass. You know, I never have the desire to burn the American flag more than when this idiocy comes out. I don't normally burn American flags. But when someone tells you that you're not allowed to do that, I think it's your duty to burn American flags. Not other people's American flags. I don't believe in that. Buy your own 100% authentic, made-in-China American flag and burn that. Make sure it's not one of the ones that the government has laced with cyanide. That's one way to keep people from burning them, I guess. Anyway, so that's where we stand as far as enlightened youth. Oh, boy. If anyone out there goes to high school, maybe you could give us a call a little later on and tell us if your high school is as bad as this. 75% think it's illegal to burn a flag. A third of the people think that it's the press is too much freedom. And more than that, think the government should approve newspaper stories before they're printed. It's kind of scary. Scary times that we live in, you know? I don't know. Oh, what's this? It's a feature we haven't had in, I think, a year. All right, hold on a second. Which feature is this? I wish somebody would warn me when this comes. Yes, it's another edition of Corporate Intelligence. A regular feature. It's not a regular feature. I can't read this. It's a feature that was canceled because it wasn't doing very well. And now apparently it did okay in syndication, so they want us to bring it back. Well, it's the truth. We're a program where we base a feature of this program where we reach out and test the intelligence of corporate employees. And if I could just step away from the script for a second, the reason why this didn't succeed was because we were having trouble finding corporate stupidity. Yes, there was the guy that at the 7-Eleven who told us that 7-Eleven was the date that 7-Eleven was founded. That's just why it's called 7-Eleven. Of course, that was wrong. But everybody else seemed to know the history of their various corporations. We asked somebody what CVS stood for, and they knew right away. All right, but that's all in the past. We're going to try this again for 2005, and hopefully it'll take off a little bit more. Okay, that's what we're going to do. And, of course, this feature is open to your suggestions. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. And your suggestions are always welcome. Now, today, I'm told that we're going to be focusing on Barnes & Noble, the booksellers. And what we're going to do is reach out to a Barnes & Noble somewhere and ask them if they know the first name of the Barnes half of Barnes & Noble. Okay, I guess that's a challenge. Because I sure don't know that. I don't know anything about this. It's probably very easy to find out on the web. In fact, what I have here seems to have come from the web. Barnes & Noble is a large chain of bookstores based in the United States. That I knew. I knew that. Et cetera, et cetera. Propaganda. Okay, Barnes & Noble was founded in 1873. And, you know, don't tell all the Barnes & Noble employees this, because I'm giving you the answer right now. We're going to see if they know it. It was founded in 1873 by Charles M. Barnes. in Wheaton, Illinois. And he opened the first retail outlet in 1917 in partnership with G. Clifford Noble. Now, we're not going to ask about the Noble part. Yeah, that is a bit difficult because his first name was a letter. All right, so we're going to call a couple of Barnes & Nobles. I think the way this works, we've never hit this yet, where if we get a wrong answer or a stupid answer, we keep going for three attempts. And if we get three stupid answers, that's a success, right? That's what we want. Okay. And if we get a good answer, that's bad. All right. Let's see if this works. Can we get a dial tone? Okay, we got a dial tone. We got one of those crazy pulsating dial tones. Now we have a real dial tone. Okay, and we can dial with impunity because nobody knows what these beeps actually are. Remember, the correct answer is Charles.
Barnes & Noble Downtown, how may I help you?
Yes, hi, I hope you can help me. I'm trying to find out some information about your store's name, Barnes & Noble. Can you tell me the first name of the Barnes part?
No, it's just Barnes & Noble.
Wasn't it named after a person? Or two people? Hello? Oh, can you believe that? She hung up? Isn't that the American way, to just hang up when you don't know the answer? And walk away if you're in person. All right, that counts as a bad answer, right? What'd she say? There is no first name? Okay, fine. We have other members. I was hoping for something a little funnier than that. We're just plain wrong. Let's try this one.
Thank you for calling Barnes & Noble at Market Common Clarendon. To save an extra 10% on every purchase, become part of the Barnes & Noble membership program. We are located at 2800 Clarendon
okay.
Boulevard in Arlington, Virginia.
Now you know where we're calling.
Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m.
I'm going
to
hit zero.
And on
okay, hopefully I'll get a human being now.
Barnes & Noble Clarendon, this is Wesley.
Hi, I'm hoping you can help me. I'm trying to find out some information about the Barnes & Noble name. Do you know the first name of the Barnes part?
No. In fact, they've been dead a long time. The company name is over 100 some years old. You probably want to contact our corporate in New York. They might have that kind of historical information. Or actually, I think there's a bit of the historical information on our website also at bn.com.
Okay, but there isn't like a picture of the founders or something in Barnes & Noble with the name.
That'd be the best place to try.
Uh-huh.
Are you online?
I can arrange to be online.
I would first go to bn.com,
uh-huh.
Look for the About the Company information.
Okay.
They'll give you the quickie and probably give you a reference for further information.
Okay. All right, thanks very much for your help.
Sure thing. Good luck.
Well, that's a wrong answer, too. He didn't know the name. You'd think if you worked for a company, you'd know something about the history. He knew something. He knew that it was that they were dead, for one thing, which, you know, it doesn't say that on this page that they're dead, but I assume if he founded the store in 1873, it would have to be a phenomenal... Okay, yeah, now I'm confirmed. He's dead. All right, and he knew that it was over 100 years ago, but he didn't know the name. I mean, you know, there's only two of them. Barnes Noble. You work for Barnes Noble. Who is Barnes? That's all I'm asking. I don't care about the Noble part, just the Barnes part. All right. So we try one more. See if we can get a right answer. Okay. It's a good suggestion. I couldn't find it on BN.com, but the internet is definitely the place to find answers to questions like this.
B. Dalton, you say, how may I help you?
Oh, is this B. Dalton? I thought it was Barnes & Noble.
Oh, same thing.
The same thing. Okay. Hopefully you can help me. I'm trying to find out information about the Barnes part of the name. Do you know the first name of the Barnes person?
Hold on 1 minute.
Thank you very much. Sounds like she actually might get something done. Oh, you know what she's doing? She's going online. That's what she's doing. That's what everybody does. They go online to find the answer. Of course, the flip side of this is that they keep you waiting for a very long time while they're searching Google for information. It's not that easy. It's not that easy to find out. But you'd think in the training course that they'd ingrain that into people's heads.
This is true. Now, how may I assist you?
Oh, hi. Yes, I was trying to find out what the first name of the Barnes part of Barnes & Noble is.
The first name?
Yeah, I imagine that somebody named Barnes founded the store, correct?
Okay, I see what you're saying now. Okay. The way that it was said to me, I couldn't interpret what they were saying. Could you hold on 1 second, sir?
Sure, no problem.
Thank you.
I wonder how it was said to her. I would have loved to have heard that. Okay, well, it seems like we're climbing up the chain of command here, so eventually we should get somebody who knows something about the history of the company. Again, if you have suggestions for the corporate intelligence segment of this program, which hopefully will come back now that we seem to be doing better this time, send them to otw@2600.com. That's 2600.com. Don't spell it out. And OTW, of course, stands for Off the Wall. Which, I don't know what that was all about, but apparently the CD skipped. Let's take a look at some listener mail while we're waiting on hold here at a Barnes & Noble somewhere.
Sir?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Upon speaking to the managerial staff, they said that particular name, the Barnes & Noble statement, is just a logo. It's not an actual person. Such in the case of like Ralph Lauren or Tommy Hilfiger, it's not an actual figure of a person.
So you're saying there was never a Barnes?
The name of the corporate, the actual company themselves is called Barnes & Noble. It is not a person themselves.
So it wasn't named after a real person, that's what I'm getting at.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. All right, thank you very much. You've been very helpful. You've been very helpful in keeping this feature going because, wow, that is something. What was she, a supervisor, and she didn't know that Charles Barnes founded Barnes & Noble? Or founded a retail outlet? Yeah, founded in 1873. That's correct, right? We verified this. All right. If anyone has news to the contrary, please let us know. But, wow, okay. That's a success, I would say. All right. We can stop the theme now. Here's some listener mail. Can you make a rule that anyone talking about masonry gets hung up on? Thanks. Okay. We had so much mail about the Freemason discussion last week. I'm talking about, about wars and people dying and presidents lying to their people and things like that. And the thing that gets the most response is Freemasonry. Well, okay, you know what? We're not going to talk about it. I'm fed up with it. I'm just going to read another letter, though. But I don't want to have an extended discussion about Freemasons. On the subject of Freemasonry, I have a tad bit of info. My grandfather was a member of a Freemason lodge in Canada. When asked, he didn't seem that secretive about it. From what I've heard, it's rather mundane and boring to be a Freemason. At least it sounded that way to me. They basically teach you how to be a good Christian, good person, how to act proper in society, and whatnot. Kind of like getting different colored belts for karate education levels. Freemasons have a class system for how much they've learned or how long they've been a part of their local lodge. My relative had the highest level and said he didn't see any reason to go to meetings anymore because he already knew all about them. Okay, well, why don't you tell us about them? You know, all these people go to these meetings. You know, karate people share the information. Freemasons is all this secretive stuff. And, you know, there's all kinds of Freemasonry things on dollar bills. You have to ask yourself, why are they so powerful that they're everywhere? That everybody who leads the country seems to be a member in some way. And if all they're about is helping people and doing nice things, why is it a secret society? And I don't think they let women in, too, right? I don't know. I know very little about it. But again, write to us. I don't want to have long discussions about Freemasons on the radio because there's so many other things to talk about. Like this, for instance. And again, our phone number is area code 631-632 WUSB 631-632-9872, country code of 1 in case you're calling from outside the area, outside the country. The McDonald's restaurant in Hermiston, Oregon. We haven't done McDonald's yet, have we? We've got to do McDonald's. But this particular McDonald's appears to be, I'm not going to say it the way they spell it. I'm going to say outsourcing. They said outsourcing, as in special sauce. No, outsourcing customers drive-through meals. Now, the restaurant on Highway 395 has outsourced one of the most important jobs at the drive-through window, order-taking. Yeah, now, you know, there are people who do this independently. You may have seen some of them in Freedom Downtime, where basically we took the people that we were interviewing took over the frequency of McDonald's and Taco Bell, and were able to speak to the customers instead of the people inside the stores, and tell them all kinds of various bizarre things to do. And I think that happened last year, and it made national news because somebody reported it to the media, and they told us about it as if it never happened before. But this is different. This is different. When a customer drives through this particular McDonald's in Hermiston, Oregon, they'll be patched through to Grand Forks, North Dakota to place the order. Why in God's name? Because the minimum wage in North Dakota is $5.15 compared to Oregon's $7.25. How do you like that? So because they're saving $2 an hour, they're sending it all the way over to another state. That's what these corporations do. Save money in every possible way. Another thing corporations do is use people without permission. You might have heard about this story. This just broke today. A jury has awarded $15.6 million to a man whose image was used for years without his permission on Taster's Choice coffee labels. You know the picture of the guy sipping the coffee? It's on every single label of Taster's Choice. He's the taster. That's his choice. Well, apparently not. This guy didn't even know his face was on there. He posed for a photo shoot in 1986, and they never told him they were going to use his face. They never said a word to him. And then one day, he was wandering down the aisle in the supermarket, looking for Bloody Mary mix. I'm not kidding. He was looking for Bloody Mary mix, and he saw his face on Taster's Choice. He doesn't even buy Taster's Choice. According to this guy, he does beans. So anyway, he decided that this was an outrage. He never got paid, for one thing, and he certainly never got permission, never gave permission to have his face used like that. The company, he decided to sue them for, I think, about $8 million. Is that what it was? Yeah, $8 million. They offered him $100,000, and the court found for him and awarded him $15.6 million. So if you see your face on a product anywhere in the supermarket, and it's there without your permission, you might have some money coming to you. And then we have this story. Again, our phone number is 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. We're not on next week, so if you have something to spout about, this is your chance. And it's your last chance for a little while. Two boys were arrested for making pencil and crayon stick figure drawings depicting a 10-year-old classmate being stabbed and hung. That's according to police. The children charged with a felony were taken from school in handcuffs. They were 9 and 10. Can you believe this? Can you believe... I mean, you know, when I went to school, we drew all kinds of pictures involving fellow classmates, and pictures were drawn of me, too. But they were arrested and charged with making a written threat to kill or harm another person. They were also suspended from school. These are stick figures, too. And the only reason they know it's the person involved was because I think they wrote the initials or the name of the person underneath it. Taken away in handcuffs. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on.
A couple of points. The reason why people would have their entire driveway shoveled out, like instead of just two tracks for a vehicle.
Uh-huh.
Would be like, say, if a FedEx guy is coming up with a package and he has to walk across the unshoveled part and he slips and breaks his neck, you gotta get
it. Yeah. Good point. Good point. I didn't think about that. But then again, I don't have any FedEx packages coming this week.
But we paid $30 and had our whole driveway done by a couple of kids, you know. We used to do it by shovel when we were kids and make money and then, you know, get in trouble with the money.
You know what people do now? They have snow plows come and do their driveway, and they charge a lot more than the kids. They just come, they shovel, they're done in 5 minutes, and that's, you know, $100 for a small driveway.
kids had like an electric shovel, not like a snowblower, but one of those like shovel-like things with the corkscrew mechanism.
Uh-huh. Electric shovels, huh?
And the other thing is, just two more points if I can quickly.
Yeah.
Never, ever, speaking as a million mile man, back up through a snowbank. You stand a very good chance of ripping out your whole exhaust system.
Yeah, but you know, my car has 200,000 miles in it, and it's gone through an exhaust system or two.
Okay, even if you're going to warm it up, though, when it's in deep snow, just clear the tailpipe, unless you want to take the big carbon dioxide.
Oh, no, I've cleared that amount of space. There is space. There's enough space. I just have to sort of get over a little bank, a little, you know, hill of snow.
And I'll try to be real quick. Also, the California guy, he didn't run away. He parked the SUV, and then he stood by and watched. And his suicide attempt is very dubious. It was not really that serious an attempt. And he was standing there watching it when it happened. He didn't run away. And secondly, or eighthly or whatever, you know, exly, you made a point about SUVs that don't start in crises. And I'm just wondering, which ones were they?
Well, it's just something I've heard. I've seen on various adventure TV shows.
And the last thing was, I wonder, which is it? Is it just an urban myth that hackers get rich by getting hired by corporations to tell them how they tested the perimeters and penetrated their supposed, you know, security systems?
Well, some people can. Some people can go that route. And the thing is, in most parts of corporate America, a hacker is never really completely trusted. So that might work for a little while, but they're always going to be suspicious about you.
Okay.
So it's not something that I think is really that great an idea, because for one thing, you sort of lose touch with the people around you that supposedly got you into this in the first place.
Imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
The last thing, I just want to reiterate, especially when they keep snow plowing and they make like a glacier in front of your driveway.
Yes.
Even if you have any kind of vehicle, please always have nose out and drive over frontwards out of it, because backing up, you'll either... You can cause extensive damage to the exhaust, or you can, block it, and you'll be driving along with a plugged-up tailpipe, and suddenly you'll feel real happy and sleepy.
Has this happened to you?
Yeah, I do it. I like it. It's like a good buzz.
Well, you sound like you know what you're talking about.
Thank you. I don't.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
And good evening. You're on the air.
How you doing tonight?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
I'm pretty okay. Hey, I wonder if the Gerber baby ever got paid for being on all those Gerber.
Who is the Gerber baby? That's a great question. That baby must be grown up now. I remember that baby when I was a baby.
Yeah, I wonder, they should have billions of dollars by now.
Well, that's assuming the baby didn't give permission, which is probably true. I don't think the baby signed any contract.
And there was a guy, a basketball player, I don't know his name, had the treads of a Goodyear tire braided in his hair on a basketball game the other day.
Okay, I must have missed that one. Was it another one of those Michigan melees?
He signed a contract with, I guess, Goodyear to have his head braided like the tread of a Goodyear tire.
How would you know? How would you know it's a Goodyear tire?
I guess it's some special tread, like for, some special brand of tire or something.
So you mean there are people out there that can look at tread on the ground and say, oh, that's a Goodyear tire.
I guess, apparently. I mean, it was probably, I guess they probably told him to do that, and then Goodyear leaked it out somehow or something. But
wow.
I heard it on some sports show, like some ESPN type thing, and I just thought it was kind of funny.
Okay, well, thanks for the info. Give me a lot to think about. Take care. Ah, boy, I've got 2 weeks' worth of thinking to do now. And good evening, you're on the air.
How
you doing?
I got a bid with the Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, surprising.
I was wondering, what does WBAI stand for?
Ah, I'm glad you asked that. WBAI stands for World Broadcasters of America Incorporated, and it comes from a commercial radio station that was donated to the Pacifica Foundation back in 1960.
So how about C-SPAN?
C-SPAN, Cable Satellite Public Affairs Network.
Oh, you know your stuff.
I try to keep up on these things.
All right, thank you. You're a wonderful person.
Thanks. 631-632-WUSB. I don't know what C-SPAN 2 stands for, though. Glad he didn't ask me about that. But, it's funny. TV networks are something that, it's one of the things I know. One of the things I know is what they stand for. Like, for instance, CNBC, which you would think, since it's owned by NBC or co-owned by NBC, would have National Broadcasting Company in there somewhere, but it's not. It's cable, Consumer News and Business Channel, I think is what it stands for. I'm not entirely sure about that. So they just basically made it say something else, even though it's NBC. Go figure. 631-632-9872. Good evening. You're on the air.
Two questions.
Yeah.
The guy talking before about the snowplow.
Uh-huh.
Cheap Seats. What happened to that show? It's all not on the radio anymore?
He reminded me of somebody from Cheap Seats. How interesting you should say that.
Yeah, it definitely was him.
Well, let's see. I can check the program log right now. That's one of our best programs, I think. It's on Wednesday. It was on Wednesday evenings.
Well, second to yours, that is.
Well, I don't want to get into a war here, but yeah, Cheap Seats supposedly is on tomorrow night at 6 o'clock, 6 to 6:30, right before Bluegrass time with Buddy.
I guess I've been missing him. Second question: what's the worst movie you've ever seen?
I said at the time, Dawn of the Dead, when it came out, the original was the worst movie I ever saw. That or Exorcist 2.
Yeah.
Since then, they've had a remake of Dawn of the Dead. I can't figure that out. And if the remake of the worst movie ever made could be worse than the worst movie ever made, I don't know. I know I'm out of date. I know there's many more horrible films that have come out that I just haven't had time to catch up on.
I was thinking about Ishtar.
Okay. That's a possibility.
Ishtar is terrible.
Uh-huh. I need to start watching Cinemax more so I can catch up on this.
Yeah, maybe. All right, good night, man.
All right. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. Again, remember, we're not on next week because of the Reggae Marathon, and no Off the Hook for a couple of weeks as well. So I'll be entering into a radio-free zone for a while, and maybe just not using my vocal cords for a spell. That'd be kind of nice for everybody, wouldn't it? Yeah. Well, here's a story that came out yesterday about this guy in South Africa who's developing an intelligent firearm. I know I'm bringing this up with only a few minutes left in the show, and this is bound to cause all kinds of controversy, although I can't really imagine why. But basically, this is something that I thought of years ago. Of course, I think of the ideas. I have no way of implementing them. This guy actually managed to implement it. The gun only operates if it identifies the user as legitimate. Yeah. Now, basically what happens, this guy was fed up with hearing stories about guns falling into the wrong hands, including children and police officers being robbed of their firearms, and this guy decided to do something about it. His name is Nick Van Ziel. He's a former civil engineer. His aim was to address shortcomings of ordinary firearms, making them safer and reducing the number of accidents. The problem with the firearm is that it is a dumb killing machine. It has no recognition of the identification of its owner and no accountability. His objectives included personalizing the weapon so that it could be used only by its owner and other identified users, to record the history of the weapon's actions, making it more accountable, and to make firearm licenses renewable. Does that sound irrational? Doesn't to me. So basically, to personalize the firearm, Van Ziel has incorporated biometrics technology into the trigger. He said his first efforts were rather crude. When we first started, fingerprint sensors were so big and cumbersome, they weren't practical, rather, for use in firearms. They were also very slow, which I guess is not what you need in a gun situation. But now they can identify the fingerprint in about an eighth of a second, which is probably enough time to grab a gun, be identified, and shoot the person that you want to shoot, or whatever it is you want to do with it. The weapon has these particular ones are police weapons. They have cameras inside them. Images are sent in real time to a central database. And I think that's kind of a good idea for cops. You know, if a cop shoots somebody, you actually have a picture of what happened. Very interesting, but I'd like to know what people think of personalized guns. It seems to make everybody happy, except for the people that don't trust anybody. You know, imagine a society where the only person who could fire a gun was the rightful owner, or somebody who was given permission to use that particular gun. Yeah, I guess there'd be situations where you need to throw your gun to somebody to help protect the damsel in distress because you're injured, and the person wouldn't be able to operate the gun in that particular situation. All right, that's going to happen sometimes. But at the same time, in order to fire the gun, you'd have to have legal ownership of it or be known to the legal owner, therefore being a lot more accountable. Make solving crimes a lot easier, wouldn't it? Make kids using their parents' guns to accidentally shoot their friends a lot harder. make parents a lot more culpable if they actually add their kids to the list. Does anybody have a problem with this? I mean, yeah, okay, fine. Your fingerprints are going to be on the gun. There might be a database, but there's databases of all kinds of things. You know, they have a database of everybody who watches cable TV. You know, they have a database of everybody who drives. They have a database of people who rent videos. It's simply staggering and unbelievable. So this is kind of important. This is something that actually affects lives. And it also preserves your right, if you feel it's a right, to own a firearm. All right, well, we're not going to have time to discuss this, obviously, since we're only on for an hour. But you can send us your email. Maybe we'll read it in a couple of weeks. otw@2600.com. Let us know what you think of that particular turn of technology. And let's get a final update on the Pope, how he's doing. Well, apparently it's no longer breaking news. Pope John Paul II was taken to the hospital late Tuesday with an acute respiratory infection. Earlier Tuesday, the Vatican announced that the 84-year-old pontiff, who suffers from a number of chronic ailments, had canceled his public and private meetings for the next few days, including his general audience on Wednesday due to a bout with influenza. Stay tuned to USB for more details on this story, if it develops any further. Meanwhile, stay tuned for the blues, which is coming up next. We'll be back in 2 weeks. I'd like to close off with a song that I've been waiting a long time to play. It's an obscure, rather obscure Pink Floyd song from the 60s that makes reference to the year 2005. See if you can hear it. This is Emmanuel. Have a good night.
Hey, Jean, this is Henry McLean, and I've finished my beautiful flying machine, and I'm ringing to say that I'm leaving, and maybe you'd like to fly with me and hide with me, baby. Isn't it strange how little we change? Isn't it sad we're insane? Playing the games that we know end in tears, the games we've been playing for thousands and thousands and thousands.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.